I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we're going to learn about how African Americans were driven out of an Arkansas town and how some residents are now trying to make amends. But first, as Congress has wrestled with the immigration bill this year, it stirred up a recurring debate about just who we want to come to America. For Chinese Americans, the debate may have hit especially close to home. The Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882 was the first law to bar immigrants based on race. But passage of that law was in some ways just a punctuation mark to a campaign of ethnic cleansing waged against the Chinese in the mid-19th century. It's a history that's been all but forgotten. Our guest, Jean Felzer, uncovers this history in a new book called Driven Out. Jean, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Jean, I have to tell you, this book is chilling. I mean, you write about dozens, possibly hundreds of towns and cities, mostly but not all in the West, where Chinese people were massacred. I use the term ethnic cleansing, and I want to ask you first if you think that's an accurate term.
I do think it's an accurate term. I tussled a lot with what was the right term for this, pogrom, ethnic cleansing, and clearly the intention, everything from local codes to lynchings to vigilantes, was to purge the Pacific Northwest of Chinese Americans, the first Chinese Americans. So I do believe the term ethnic cleansing is appropriate.
How did you get interested in this story?
In the 70s, when I was finishing graduate school, I took a job at Humboldt State University in the northmost corner of California, and there are six tribes that send their students, their kids, to Humboldt State. And it was a very active time. People were getting together. It was the last year of the Vietnam War. And in all of these events and in my classroom, there were no Asian kids. And when I started asking, where are the Asian students? Some people hadn't noticed. And one local poet said, Chinese Americans won't send their kids here. 100 years ago, they were driven out. And I felt like I needed to tell the story of that one town, only to find out that this was a massive repression of vigilante action.
You dug up a lot of first-person accounts, court records, diaries, and so forth. It is extremely detailed. But it leads me to wonder, why have we heard so little of this until now?
I think that the history of Asian Americans is marginalized in this country. There's a myth of Asian Americans, like there is a myth of Jews, that they have money, that they're the model migrant, that they're always successful, that history didn't come down on them. And I think that this is a story that, in fact, was not hard to find. What was really troubling to me was how easy it was to find. It's all over the place. It's in court records. It's in newspapers. The first afternoon I was looking for the story, I thought it only happened in one town. And by the end of the first afternoon, I knew it had happened in 40 towns. I'm sitting at a microfilm reader going, there goes Petaluma, there goes Sacramento, there goes San Jose. And within a year, I knew it was 250 roundups.
And this is particularly important because the Chinese were not the only immigrants here. They were not the only, there were Europeans, there were former enslaved African Americans who moved to some of these areas to work in the gold rush. Why were the Chinese singled out among all the immigrants who came here?
What they did to the Chinese was actually copied from laws and codes and vigilante actions that had been initially designed for Mexicans, Chilenos, Argentinians, Peruvians, who beat the Chinese to the gold fields. I think there are several explanations. The most common explanation is job competition, but the first Chinese Americans were not taking jobs from other immigrants. Another explanation has to do with physical difference. The Chinese looked different. They were smaller. Chinese men wore their hair in a long queue down their back. And I think built into that was a lot of homophobia, that they were living in all-male bachelor communities and were seen as very threatening in that way.
But part of the reason they were living in all-male communities is that before the Chinese Exclusion Act, the law had kept out most Chinese women.
Exactly. In 1875, the Page Act is passed, which bans Chinese women from entering the country. And that makes this ethnic cleansing, too. If you ban women, you ban children, heritage, lineage, future generations.
So how would these purges work? What would happen?
in many towns, a day was picked. In Tacoma, Washington, one morning in February 1886, 9 o'clock in the morning, all of the whistles at the foundries and factories go off right at the same time. And 4 hours later, the Chinese are gone. That vigilantes have been notified that it is now okay to rout Chinatown. And they come into Chinatown. They raid the stores. They pull the material, the food, the rice, the furniture, the china that was so highly valued at the time, pulled into the streets, load the Chinese up. The women who have bound feet are thrown into carts because they can't walk, and they send them on a forced 9-mile march up to a railroad crossing they had actually built. And there they wait for trains to take
them. And where were they
them.
Supposed to go?
You know, they were supposed to leave. Where they went was often up to them. From a North Coast town called Eureka, California, they were put on steamships down to San Francisco. From Tacoma, Washington, most of them marched the 140 miles following the railroad tracks down to Portland, Oregon, from a little town called Crescent City. As each lumber ship came week by week by week, they were rounded up and loaded onto as many as could onto lumber ships. And when there were only 7 or 8 left, then they were loaded into a cart and taken up to the Redwoods and dumped out.
And what happened to them?
We don't know what happened to the people from Crescent City. What we do know is that the people from Eureka, purged from Eureka in a horrible 24 hours, sent on steamships, arrive quickly in San Francisco. The custom house is closed for the weekend. They escape off the ship, flee into San Francisco's Chinatown. And that afternoon, after this horrific weekend, they call a meeting, invite the white press, invite the Chinese six companies, and announce that they're going to sue Eureka. And that becomes the first lawsuit for reparations in the United States.
That actually leads to my next question, which is, did any of the Chinese fight back?
The Chinese always fought back.
You mean legally or physically?
Legally,
through force of arms?
Physically, they bought arms from China. They filed the first lawsuit for police harassment in San Jose.
Did these purges occur under color of law? Was this legal to do, or was this all vigilantism?
I believe it occurred not only under cover of law, but led by many elected town leaders. The mayor of Tacoma, Washington, is the leader of the purge there. In Eureka, it's timber barons who are funding the purge and endorsing the purge. What happens is that people cross their class interests, which would be to have cheap Chinese labor, in order to stitch together a community of whiteness, a rural town where people felt isolated, marginalized. I think that many people looked at the life of Chinese Americans and saw their own busted dreams and projected a lot of their own loneliness, crummy food, isolation, dirt, bachelor communities, and tagged that onto the first Chinese Americans. And that runs across classes.
I'm talking with Jean Felser, the author of Driven Out, a work that documents the purging of Chinese Americans from communities in the West in the mid-19th century. Why did the purges stop, and what lesson do you draw from all this?
I think the purges stopped for two reasons. The counties and towns that meant to do it had done it by the turn of the century, and the counties that refused to do it accepted the refugees and went on. Also, by 1902, the United States passes its last exclusion law, and then they enter because the United States is at war with Japan, China's at war with Japan, this is a sop to China. So the story comes to an end for those two reasons. The lessons we draw for today is that ethnic cleansing is still going on in this country. In towns like Hazleton, Pennsylvania, Riverside, New Jersey, Farmers Branch, Texas, a suburb of Dallas, they're doing the same thing, like the Jim Crow laws or the laws against the Chinese Americans, of taking a code. In this case, it's a code that says a landlord can't rent to an undocumented worker. And of course, there's no way landlords can verify immigration records. And they're using these codes to purge thousands and thousands of people from over 82 towns in the United States.
Wait a minute, though. I'm not sure that I would buy that attacking people, destroying their property is the same thing. So I guess I wonder why you believe that overcrowding codes and things of that sort have to be observed as the same as ethnic cleansing.
I think the effect is the same, that Hazleton, Pennsylvania has lost a third of its population, of its, in this case, Latino population, by being driven out of town by a code so that the town will return to the all-white status it had about 10 years ago. So the surface appearance isn't as violent, but the impact is, we know the vigilante actions and the militia and the Minutemen along the border are as violent as the 19th century vigilantes driving out and rounding up Chinese people. So I see the possibility for violence against immigrants very similar to what happened in the 19th century.
Jean Felzer is the author of Driven Out, The Forgotten War Against Chinese Americans, and she's a professor at the University of Delaware. She joined us in our studio in Washington. Jean Felzer, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.